Although Mary Williams can now call Jane Fonda mother, her early life was far from star-studded. In a memoir called The Lost Daughter, she describes growing up in the 1970s in Oakland, California, during the heyday of the Black Panther movement. She was just a toddler when her father was sent to San Quentin, and her mother, who struggled to support the family on her own, started drinking heavily. And then Mary's teenaged older sister turned to crack and prostitution. When Mary was a teen, she met and was later kind of adopted by Miss Fonda. Mary Williams was a guest on our show in April to talk about her memoir, and we thought we would play that interview again as we start this long holiday weekend. I began by noting that in the book she says revolution was a day-to-day reality during her early childhood, and I asked Mary Williams in what ways.
Absolutely. It was a time of great turmoil in the country, not just in Oakland. The Black Panthers had just formed. They were a group on the defensive against a very repressive police state against black people in Oakland. So there was violence on a day-to-day basis. There was protest on a day-to-day basis.
And they walked around with guns.
With guns.
In fact, the NRA probably would be proud of them today. Was your family in close contact with the leaders of the movement? Did you meet Huey Newton and Eldridge Cleaver and all the other top leaders?
Absolutely. I did 100%. I was a child with Huey's children. His stepkids were in the same classroom that I was in.
Was your father sent to jail because of his Black Panther activities?
Yes, he was. He was part of something called the Armed Citizens Patrol, which was a group of Panthers armed with guns and legal documents so they can read off their rights. And they would stop police officers that were either brutalizing someone or illegally stopping someone and intervene.
Now, you went to Black Panther school. What was that like? Was it like any other school?
No, it was not. The Black Panther school, or the Black Panther Party in general, I consider my first family because we lived communally. We had communal Panther housing. We went to our own school. As a child, I called the people who were older than me comrade, and they called me comrade. And it was a really beautiful and empowering experience as a young black person to be a part of the Panthers.
And they were teaching you arithmetic and reading and spelling as
science,
well?
Science, yeah. A lot of the programs that came out of the Panther school were implemented in public school systems like free lunch programs.
Do you think you were lucky because you were the youngest in your family? Because your life went very differently from your siblings.
So interesting you say that. That's exactly what I say. People say, well, how did you not turn out the same? I think it was my birth order. I got a chance to see what was coming up the road, you know.
And what led your sisters to fall prey to drugs?
We didn't have a father in the home. And my
But didn't the Panthers come to your aid?
Oh, we left a part of the story out. At one point, my mother left the Panthers. There was a point where the Panthers were deteriorating. The party was deteriorating. She took us out of the Panthers, and I lost that first family and had my single-parent family, which was my mother and my siblings. And she struggled to take care of us. She lost a job that she did get and went on welfare, and she started drinking, and things went downhill from there.
How old were you when you became aware that some of your sisters had turned to prostitution?
Oh, God, I was about 8.
Did you understand what all that meant?
I kind of did, because growing up in a neighborhood like that, you don't get the idyllic childhood. I did, and I was actually told by my mother told the rest of us not to let my sister in the house because she would steal things for her addiction, and so we were told to shun her in a sense.
You write a lot about the dangers of being a woman in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You were something of a tomboy. Did that protect you at all?
It did. I felt very empowered as a little girl. I was a tomboy. I could go out by myself. I could play in the creek, but the minute for a lot of girls when puberty hits, you know, it becomes very predatory. You know, you're 11, 12 years old trying to go to school, and here are grown men patrolling the bus stops. It was awful. And it still happens today. I just saw a documentary about it on Oakland and that predatory behavior.
Why do you think it persists in Oakland?
I think it persists around many communities.
But there are a lot of poor communities where that doesn't occur.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I just know that it is. And it's a pretty bad situation.
How did your Uncle Landon know Jane Fonda and Tom Hayden?
Yeah. Actually, Jane Fonda and Tom Hayden were supporters of the Panthers. They actually donated money and did fundraisers and things like that. And so my uncle also traveled with them on a tour of Africa. And that's how they got to get closer and know each other.
And they had established a summer camp?
Yeah, they did. They told my uncle, you know, we're going to start this camp. We're going to have children of all races and all socioeconomic levels. And we'd like to have some Panther children. And so he had plenty of those. So he sent me and a couple of siblings. And I kept going back. My siblings didn't like it after the first time.
Why didn't they? I mean, obviously there was some kind of a culture shock for all of you.
Right, right. There was a culture shock that they couldn't have, and maybe my temperament was that I liked to be in varied environments, and I was comfortable meeting different people.
How old were you when you started going to the camp?
I was 11 when I first went.
So you kept on going into your teen years?
I kept going into my teen years, but there was a period where I stopped, and a sexual assault had happened to me, and the counselors were calling, wondering why I wasn't coming back.
You were 14
yes.
at the time of the sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
Did you tell anybody what had happened?
I didn't tell anyone in Oakland, but when they finally coaxed me back to camp, they saw I was a different person, and I told one of the camp counselors, and they told Jane.
Now, how were you different? You were failing at school?
Well, I was that outgoing tomboy. I felt, after being exposed to something outside of Oakland, because it was a theater arts camp, I thought, oh, maybe I can be an actress. I was kind of inspired by that camp experience, and I was going out on auditions, and it was at what I thought was an audition that the sexual assault happened. To myself, I said, why did I think I could be anything better? That brutality made me realize that maybe I'm not meant for something better.
It put you back in your
place.
And
it put me back in my place. So when they saw me that next time, they thought, this is not the same girl.
And you'd been keeping this a secret from
yes.
everyone. You were just a kid.
Yes.
That must have been eating away at your soul.
It was. And you know, I held it. And when I finally told someone, I didn't think anything would happen of it. But Jane said, you know, she saw I was in crisis, and she said, you know, if you want, you can come and live with me.
Well, what happened when you told your family what had happened?
I told my uncle, and he was he was definitely devastated by it, because he was actually a positive person in my life. And my mother, there was almost no reaction at all.
You think she just thought, well, here's another problem?
Yeah. It wasn't unusual. You know, it happened to my sister. So,
well, but that is not very good mothering.
No, and in all fairness, she was struggling with an addiction, and it comes later in the book that I reconcile with my mother eventually. But
my guest is Mary Williams. She's written a memoir called The Lost Daughter. So Jane Fonda says that despite your intelligence, your grades were failing, and she told you that if you brought your grades up by the end of the year, if your mother permitted, you could live with her in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
How did your family react to that offer?
My Uncle Landon was thrilled. He saw it as a great opportunity for me. My mother was disengaged. When I told her, there was no real response at all. And so I left. But I left because when I was a minor, I thought she would call me back and say, you can't have my daughter. And I was happy when she didn't, but also saddened that she didn't.
Did you know if Jane intended to house you long term?
No. I think she just wanted to make sure I got through school. But when I got there, our bond kind of grew, and it became a mother-daughter relationship, and I never left.
And your life changed, obviously. You
yes.
went from Oakland to Santa Monica.
Yes.
But that must have been quite a bit of a culture shock.
It was definitely a culture shock. I remember driving in from the airport and just the clean, wide streets. And I thought it so odd to see these skinny women in these shorty shorts running and jogging around. You would never see that in Oakland. But just acclimating to the home and to the new family that I had.
Had Jane already started doing her exercise tapes?
Oh, yeah. She actually would, because she was at the top of her career at that time and very busy. So to keep me busy, you know, she would bought me the little leotards and sent me to the class, and I'm being there with everybody else doing the Jane Fonda workout.
What were the hardest things to adjust to?
I think the hardest thing adjusting to it, because I think I still had a little bit of post-traumatic stress coming into that situation, it was trying to feel safe, because every night I would still put a chair under the door and I'd make sure the windows were locked. And it took a while for me to eventually let my guard down and realize that I was in a safe place.
And how long before you started calling her mom?
About a year or so, I would say. She said to me, you know, if you want, you can call me your mom.
Well, you had moved in with her when she was married to Tom Hayden.
Yes.
And that ended.
Yes.
And she still had a very busy career.
Yes.
So did she have much time for you?
Oh, yeah. That's the odd thing is, what was so great about it is that she took me being with her so seriously that our relationship was really intense. We spent a lot of time together talking a lot, hashing things out a lot.
And she had her own kids.
And she had her own kids. And none of them, and they didn't resent me for it. And Vanessa especially probably should have resented me because she was having problems with Jane. But Jane brings me in and not only says, am I living there, but she's living in your room and you're going to share the bed with her. And Vanessa was like, okay. And I had to thank her as an adult. I had to go back and, you know, to her and say, thank you for being such a terrific teen, you know.
What was it like later when Jane Fonda married Ted Turner and you found yourself sitting at a table in a southern plantation being served by black people? You were the only black person at
yes,
the table.
Yes, and big giant Scarlett O'Hara painting. It was surreal. It was odd. But I knew Ted's heart by then. And I could look at that situation and judge it. But what I did on the sly is that I went after the dinners and before dinners, I spent my time in the kitchen getting to know who these people were and why they were there. And I learned their history and I felt better about it.
Jane also introduced you to many books and authors.
Yes.
So this was a kind of an education as well, before you even went to college.
It was. And even in education about my history as an African American, she made sure that I did not forget that I was an African American, not that I could, but she would always buy me books and music, Billie Holiday and Nina Simone and, yeah.
What did you think when you left your home at the age of 16, your biological mother's home?
Mm-hmm.
Did you think you'd ever go back?
I never thought I'd go back. I planned on not going back.
And then it took you 30 years.
It took me 30 years of all that unresolved issues to bubble over to where I knew I had to go back.
Had you been in touch at all?
No. I went back for my sister's funeral, but I did not speak. I stayed with my uncle, and I did not want to speak with my mother.
Had your other sisters straightened out their lives?
I have one sister who managed to actually get a master's degree, but she was the only one. One sister, we don't know where she is, and the other sister has six children.
Just like your mom.
Yeah, yeah. And then I have a brother, too, that lives in Oakland.
When you were in college, you caught the traveling bug. Had you done much traveling before that?
I did with my mom on her movie sets. We went down to Mexico City for The Old Gringo. We went up to Canada for Stanley and Iris. So it kind of began traveling with her to movie sets.
Although then later you wind up going all over the world, Africa to Antarctica, the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah.
What led you to choose the places that you went to?
Initially, the first big trip was I was living in Atlanta, and I just felt really overwhelmed by my life. And I felt the need to get out of a bad relationship I was in, to sell my house, to sell my car, and just do the Appalachian Trail to get a sense of clearing my mind. And it was while I was...
But you didn't go to Argentina instead.
No, I went on the...
You really went on the trail.
I really went on the trail, not like some people. I didn't see him there. And it was while I was on the trail that I mourned my sister who was murdered for the first time. Because while I was on the trail, I'd read a story about a girl, an African-American girl who had been raped and assaulted. And it reminded me of Deborah. And I started thinking about her and I started mourning and I started opening up.
You could also mourn for yourself because of your own sexual assault.
Exactly.
You worked with the Lost Boys of Sudan. So has much of your travel been involved with volunteering and working in the nonprofit world?
Yeah,
the NGO
my whole
world?
Life. My whole life, traveling and non-traveling, is dedicated to service. Yeah.
And then Antarctica, what did you do there to save the penguins?
Actually to work to support scientists doing that research, actually.
Can you describe the reunion with your mother?
You had
to return to this place that you had fled.
Yeah, and it's funny because she lives in a house a stone's throw away from the house that we lived in before. She never really left the area. And I remember knocking on the door, and she opened it. And I remember her as being bigger than me and imposing and kind of regal. And she had shrunken, and her hair was white cotton ball and all over the place. And she couldn't stand up straight. She had some ailments, and she was adorable. And I never thought I would look at her and think that. And she was funny. We sat down and we talked, and I got to know her as a person because I never knew her. As a kid, it was don't talk to adults, you know, seen and not heard kind of thing. And she didn't know me, and I didn't know her. So it was two people getting to know one another.
So she had grown during this time, and she had gotten past her problems?
No, she still struggles, and our relationship is not, you know, there's no fairy tale ending in the book. It's an ongoing process. But I have respect for her and I have understanding of her.
And do you feel you now have two families? Or
I do, because I'm very closely connected back with my uncle and my aunt and my cousins.
There
and
have been strains.
And we went on a camping trip and we have another camping trip.
But there have been strains
with my mother and my
Jane
siblings.
Fonda.
There was. I went through a period where I was very angry with Jane, and I realized that I was really using her as a symbol of my birth mother. I was putting that on Jane, unfortunately.
So now you've written this memoir.
Mm-hmm.
You want to keep on writing?
I think so. I think I'd like to try a little bit more. Don't know quite what or what yet, but yeah.
Your mother and Jane Fonda met after you were reunited with your mother.
Yeah.
How did that go?
It was interesting. We met in Berkeley, and my mom, Jane, cried. And Mama looked at her like, why is this woman crying? It was interesting. And we went back to my birth mother's house and chatted there, too. And it was lovely. It was a miracle to see these two people together for me.
Well, in a way, Jane Fonda has been your mother a lot longer than your biological mother.
Exactly. And I consider Jane more my mother because I know her and she mothered me longer. And I'm just starting this mother-daughter relationship with my birth mother.
And what do you do now? Mostly work for NGOs?
I've been for the past couple of years doing work with the national parks, but I took some time off to do the book.
Mary Williams's work has appeared in The Believer, McSweeney's, and Oh, the Oprah magazine. She's written a children's book called Brothers in Hope, the story of the lost boys of Sudan. And now she's written a memoir about leaving Oakland and her biological family to live with Jane Fonda. The book is called The Lost Daughter, and it is published by Blue Rider Press. And I thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you.